The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
When disasters strike around the nation, one of the most important calls for help can be to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration. But when FEMA arrives at the scene of an emergency, how does the agency connect with local first responders? UW-Milwaukee is teaming up with FEMA to coordinate a unique program, one designed to bring together disaster relief teams to plan better ways of helping the public. Joining us on this edition of UWM Today is Stan Stojkovic, the dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM, and one of the brainchilds, one of the fellows who was behind the FEMA partnership. Welcome, Stan. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I'm always a pleasure to come.
So how did you go ahead and establish this relationship that really put UWM at the center of how to plan for disasters better?
Well, this is really something where we got to give students credit. There were current students and former students back in 2012, last year, that were working with FEMA as part of an internship program. And they sat around the coffee clutch over there in the Altira in the library, and they started talking about ideas to improve FEMA's response. And one of the things that came out of that, and again, these were students, and one former student, one current student, and a representative from FEMA, who is also a UWM graduate. And they said, why don't we do a think tank? So a think tank was created. They came to me and said, geez, we would like to do this think tank. So I started to initiate a conversation with FEMA officials in Washington, D.C., as well as Milwaukee, to say, how best do we do this? So we planned a think tank. It occurred in January of 2012. To our surprise, the first FEMA think tank ever. Hosted here at UWM, and the chancellor was there, Chancellor Lovell, kicked it off. We had great representation. But most importantly, we had 660 calls from across the world regarding emergency management issues. FEMA, subsequent to that initial think tank, has had 9 think tanks. And the last one was held at the White House, in which I was invited, and we can talk about that maybe a little bit later. But the whole idea was to get people thinking and to engage the academic community. Subsequent to the think tank, we've also held a summit here at UWM to get UWM researchers, students, staff who are interested in this topic, connecting with FEMA officials to ultimately produce a plan, and that's where we're at right now.
So what's the biggest challenge that faces people who respond to disasters? What came out of all of these think tanks in terms of, we need to do things a little bit better? What is it that isn't quite working as well as it could?
Well, as you can imagine, there are a number of challenges. With the Oklahoma tornado just a few weeks ago, Sandy last November, the whole issue of FEMA response and their ability to respond, particularly to people who are the most vulnerable. The disabled, the poor, the elderly, individuals who don't have traditional access or don't have the resources to access. That is probably one of the most difficult things because those populations tend to be the most adversely affected by disasters. They don't have resources. They don't have the mobility in some cases. They don't have the opportunity to ultimately address their personal needs during a disaster. So one of the biggest things that really came out of this was how do we help that population and how do we, most importantly, I think, get ordinary people to think about disaster preparedness now, before a disaster. What are the kind of approaches, practices that we can give to people so that they can prepare themselves so the government may not be there for 2-3 days? How best do we prepare people in that regard? And that's a real major challenge that we face.
So it's not only training the caregivers, the people who are supposed to step in and help get things organized and deliver assistance at the scene of incident like a hurricane or a tornado, but it's actually boiling it all the way down to the real grassroots of my house and your house.
That's exactly right. It's about citizens taking charge. And, you know, citizens who have resources tend to make these decisions, think about these decisions. Basic things like, do you have enough water? What happens if the power goes out? Do you have a generator? Do you have access to the internet? Do you have the ability to meet basic needs in a 24 to 72 hour period subsequent to a disaster. Most people don't even think about these things. But I think what you see across the country is more awareness due to the recurrence of disasters, whether they're hurricanes or tornadoes, all these types of things that we've been put in the forefront in the last 10 years, since Katrina, actually, in New Orleans. So FEMA has actually done an excellent job at reaching over to academia and saying, you're part of the community. How can you help us? And let me tell you, Tom, the ideas that students and faculty and staff came up with at UWM are enormous. And we're now working towards some secondary steps and possible research designs, integration with FEMA activities in terms of a collaboration. We have that MOU that talks about possible exchanges. There's a lot of the field here is really broad and wide, and it feels a little bit overwhelming as the dean of the School of Social Welfare, but it's something that, you know, fell into my lap somewhat fortuitously, actually, and I've actually enjoyed working on this project.
So can you give us some examples of some of the suggestions that have come forward, at least in this early stage of trying to figure out how we can help people help themselves better?
Yeah, you know, there's plenty of people out there who are interested in technological fixes, but they're not the best answers. You know, we've got people who are technically proficient. We have engineers. We have, you know, scientists who are doing all sorts of things, from water preparation or water preservation. The whole idea is actually very, very interesting. But at the core, it's really the people projects. How do we engage people? So, for example, FEMA has been investigating in the last year, educating 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds. Young people, very young people, about the disaster preparedness, with the intent that they would take that home with them and educate their parents. Typically, people think about parents educating their children, and obviously they do that. But in this regard, how do we get children? How do we get a center, a disaster recovery center, designed architecture, urban planning, for example, in such a way that people, A, know where it is, and that it's actually usable during a disaster? These are the kinds of projects and ideas. How do we get power sources? We've got some engineers at the UWM faculty who've created a power source that can be up and running fairly quickly, as opposed to waiting 24 hours. How do we do that? Okay, these are some of the projects. I'm telling you, we've probably got over 100 projects. We've had to boil these down. We just finished transcribing the transcripts from the tapes, actually, I should say, from the summit. It was 379 pages that we went through meticulously and summarizing them and then sending them back literally yesterday to the participants and saying, let's reengage now. Let's talk about specific initiatives. The MOU that we have with FEMA is really about exchange, curriculum development, emergency management development. So that's a separate project. How do we build curricula? What kind of courses? How is it multidisciplinary? Who do we engage? Clearly, just about every school and college on the campus could be involved. And we had representation from every school and college. And we meant it somewhat to be internal. We didn't mean to exclude any external partners, but we meant it to be a think tank for UWM people, the students, the faculty, and the staff. And so far, we've got a lot of ideas. Now it's the hard work, which is how do we operationalize those ideas?
You mentioned Katrina. And, of course, looking back to the terrible, terrible disaster that hit New Orleans a number of years ago, there was a lot of criticism about FEMA and the lack of response or the length of response. And, in fact, there were those infamous images of then-President Bush saying, you're doing a good job down here, Brownie. Things are, you know, really appreciate what you're doing. And it turned out it really wasn't as good as it could have been. Has FEMA reacted to Katrina? Is this a reaction to maybe not having pulled off the rescue as well as it should have back in New Orleans years ago? Or is there something else behind FEMA's willingness to come to the table and desire to be more involved?
Well, my sense is that the disaster of Katrina was the response, not the disaster. The response was viewed so negatively, and I think FEMA took a lot of heat, and some of that unjustified, but some of it justified. The criticism was legitimate. But look at how FEMA responded to Sandy. Ironically, we had the summit planned for November of 12, thinking that hurricane season was over, and that's when Sandy hit New York. And so FEMA had to jump, and we had to cancel the summit and reschedule it at UWM because of the response. And they got very positive response and very positive feedback saying, boy, you've really responded fairly quickly. They're getting a lot of positive feedback now in Oklahoma, and that's a major disaster as well that they're going to have to respond to. But I think that FEMA has come a long way. Remember, FEMA now is a small agency, tiny agency within the Department of Homeland Security. They are really the sort of a stepchild in Homeland Security, if I may editorialize, you know, and that's not to minimize them. It's to say the nature of disasters, their response, the ability to develop good information, to integrate academics in this case, but also the entire community, which is very large and very diverse and very uneven. How best do you do that? And I think that they've come a long way, but they have a long way to go, and they'll admit that to you. You know, Deputy Richard Serino, who signed the MOU on behalf of FEMA with Chancellor Lovell, I think did an outstanding job by saying to us, this is groundbreaking. We've never had anything like this, and we look forward to this partnership. So I think they're recovering, and they're recovering very well.
And probably one example of how things have done a big turnaround are those incredible images, both after Sandy and then more recently as the New Jersey shore began to open up again, of Governor Chris Christie, who's at one political poll, and President Obama at another end of the political spectrum, meeting and talking and celebrating the success of what has happened since Sandy.
You know, my sense is that that's what government's about. Government's about putting aside differences, some of them very deep ideological differences, some of them economic differences, but saying, okay, this is about, we're all Americans. This is about helping us to help ourselves and how best we can do that. And you know, whether you agree or disagree with Governor Christie's politics, the fact of the matter is he got a lot of political points because, in my phrase, people who effectively come to the middle, meet people in the middle, can solve problems. If you can't come to the middle, you can't solve problems. And these problems are immediate problems. How do we get water? How do we get fuel to people? Food. They're going to die or they're going to be severely harmed. This, we have to set aside these partisan politics. I just wish it didn't take a disaster to ultimately do that. But I think you're right. I think that's a great example of the opposing parties that can't agree on anything usually every day or any day now coming together. And I think FEMA's in the middle of that. And I think they've done a very good job.
Well, we've been talking about FEMA and the federal response. Let's talk a bit about local agencies. There are some who believe that when you see a disaster and the way in which the local respondents can work together in that moment of crisis is maybe a signal of why they should work to get more closely together when things are normal. The whole notion of a metropolitan government that would lead to shared services. Do you see that as perhaps one of the outcomes of getting ready for the big one?
Well, my sense is I don't know if that's necessarily an outcome. That clearly looms large. That's the huge elephant in the room. I've been talking about metropolitan government for a number of years because the idea of metropolitan government actually helps everyone. The city of Milwaukee being the largest contributor at a number of different levels. But, you know, there's all sorts of issues, as you know, Tom, that are economic issues. There are political issues. There are educational issues. There are healthcare delivery issues. I hope that a disaster isn't what forces people to think about those issues. But a disaster does push you to the precipice. It forces you to say, what do we really care about? How best do we ultimately respond to this disaster? And I think we've got plenty of resources. It's not about money per se. It's really about how do we best coordinate, set aside political differences, albeit in some cases very deep political differences. But how do we set aside and look, what's the goal here? What's the prize we're trying to achieve? And we have that opportunity. You know, we have had people who attended the summit who contact me who are very conservative Republicans and very liberal Democrats. And they're able to come to the table and say, this is for the collective good. This is to help the collective body. And it's our most disenfranchised, our most disabled, our most who are sort of limited in their resources, who require the greatest assistance. You know, and if we can come to their aid during a disaster, can't we come to their aid sooner in other areas? that is a larger issue. I don't want to get bogged down in the mire of that discussion, but I do want to say that, yeah, I think that looms large over these kinds of discussions.
Sen, you've been talking about the ways in which the university, UWM in particular, can play a role in perhaps helping to catalyze action to bring together a more united response when disasters strike. What schools, what colleges, what part of the academy are at the table in these discussions? Obviously, you lead the social welfare group, which is a great big school at the university. Lots of different facets, criminal justice and social workers and the like, and much, much more. What other schools or colleges might have something to contribute?
Every one of them. There isn't a school or college at UWM. Starting with our newest school, one of our newer schools, public health, for example. Public health has a key role in this area. Architecture and urban planning has a key role. The Peck School of the Arts have a key role. You know, interestingly enough, Tom, when I was in the White House a few months ago celebrating the Sandy response, it was interesting to see that there was a young woman there who was an artist from New York City who used her collective artistic creativity to develop a communication network across people on the internet, through Facebook, through Twitter, that ultimately helped people's lives. This was a woman who was not enlisted, who wasn't paid to do this, who ultimately saw a need and said, I can help. That's what's happening at UWM. I can't think of a school or college, health sciences, nursing, letters and sciences with its huge number of departments that would not be involved in this. And in fact, all of them came to the table. At some, respect, and I want them to continue to come at the table as our next meetings evolve this summer as we go forward with specific research projects and specific initiatives. Curriculum development is something that I think is very interesting. Our School of Education and the School of Social Welfare working on that together, I think, and health sciences in particular could be very, very valuable.
So perhaps when you, in future years, have classes graduating, walking across the stage at our annual commencement ceremony, there may be a time where these graduates are perhaps themselves better armed to be active respondents or at least play a role in helping to address the problems that occur when things go bump in the night.
We absolutely have a role. FEMA recognizes it. The vision of their administration right now at FEMA in Washington is very focused on academic involvement. We were very fortunate because we had, two students who sat around coffee and started talking with FEMA people about this and then approached me well over almost a year and a half ago now, and the ball has been rolling ever since, and I want it to continue to roll. It's a benefit to the state of Wisconsin, the city and county of Milwaukee, as well as the nation. If we can at UWM can forge some kind of development plan, curricular, research, we can share that with other universities. That's FEMA's really intention. But we're sitting at the forefront here, and I think there's great opportunity that we need to really move forward on.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. Joining us in the studio is Stan Stojkovic. Stan is the dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM. And we spent the first part of the program talking about a unique partnership that UWM has forged with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, as we look for ways of making it making our systems work better when disaster strikes. In the remainder of the program, we'd like to talk about another wonderful initiative that Stan is in the middle of. You're a busy guy, Stan.
Yes.
Stan is helping to lead a new initiative on campus called the Institute for Urban Agriculture and Nutrition. And of all the different new programs that loom on the horizon as we keep reinventing the university here in Milwaukee, this seems like it has enormous potential given the fact that Wisconsin is the dairy land. It's got its roots based in agriculture, but it also makes the machines that work in the fields and, some amazing synergies that exist there. So tell us about what is planned with the tentatively named Institute for Urban Agriculture.
Well, basically, this was something that started 2 years ago. Growing Powers' Will Allen, who's an international celebrity in what he calls the Good Food Revolution, a book he published last year, came to the campus 2 years ago, Chancellor Lovell, and said, I'd like to partner with UWM to develop a consortium of universities and businesses that would be focused on urban agricultural and nutrition issues. And he sees it as a necessity. The food system in this country, he believes, is broken. We need to develop better alternatives and more healthier choices for people. And as a result, he came to Mike, and Mike Lovell, the chancellor, said, well, let's see if we can get someone to really work on this. Well, we started with a food summit in November of 11, and we came up with 200 projects. All schools and colleges relate to urban agriculture, urban nutrition, everything from soil science to aquaponics to the health benefits to the social questions of why don't people eat healthier food. It cuts across all schools and colleges at UWM. Subsequent to that, in early January of 12, Chancellor Lovell called me up and said, Stan, I'd like you to take this on and move this forward. And my initial response that I tell people somewhat jokingly is, you know, Chancellor Lovell, I don't know the difference between a tulip and a turnip. Now, people have told me, one, you don't eat, okay? But I laughed about that, but he said, no, I think you can do this. This is something that we'd like to see if you can put this together. So we've spent the last 12, 14 months developing relationships with other universities, UW-Madison, UW Ag Extension, Marquette University, MATC, the Medical College, UWM, obviously, and we're now working with potentially the Milwaukee School of Engineering. How do we bring them together and develop some kind of common understanding? So we had a memorandum of understanding that all the presidents of those universities signed. We were pursuing some grants. We just found out yesterday, it's very fortuitous we're having this show today, that we received a major grant from the Growth Agenda, the University of Wisconsin system, really to help us to plan and develop the Institute on Urban Agriculture and Nutrition. We have many people who want to give us money, who want
us
to go forward.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, that is a good problem at one level, but we don't have anything yet in place. I chair a committee at this point in time. I'm not heading anything. I'm just basically chairing a committee that's moving forward. And we have some planning grants in the works as well. We got this major grant announcement yesterday. But you will see UWM and the rest of these campuses developing this Institute on Urban Agriculture and Nutrition fairly quickly now. And we have active partners in the Food Council. These are entities and agencies that are doing this kind of work. We need them to help us define the research questions and how we best can go forward. This has enormous potential. Will Allen is fond of saying, we don't have a choice. We have to make better food, locally grown food, food available to people here in Milwaukee and empower them. And when we do that, we can do all sorts of things. And so this, too, is a very big project, but it's one in which we're having some very good successes early on in the process.
Are there any models around the country, or is this going to sort of be the first in terms of pulling together multiple universities and working with community partners like Growing Power?
Now, I've been briefly in touch with a group of people down in Chicago who are trying to do this, but they've been doing it about 4 or 5 years, and they haven't gotten half as far as we have gotten. I always say to people, listen, before you get married, you have to date. You know, and so we have to build relationships with people, and they have to trust us, and that's the most important part, and that takes time to do that. Once you do that, then people are comfortable to move forward and build structures and then commit dollars to it. And once you're successful in getting some planning grants, they see that it's a viable kind of product that can go forward. So they have something down in Chicago, in the Chicago area, and I believe also there's something that may be in the Cleveland area, but I'm not totally sure about that. But the point is, there aren't a lot of people doing this. You know, to get 7 universities to agree on just about anything is oftentimes difficult, but that's where I come in to try to make that happen. And I think it's not just me, but the staff that I'm working with, the representatives of these various institutions, the representatives from Growing Power that sit on this. The city of Milwaukee is an active partner as well. It takes all those people to come together and to agree to common language and to say, we're going to make this movement, and that's what we're doing.
Will Allen, the wonderful, wonderful treasure that we have here in Milwaukee, who is known around the world now for what he's trying to do in terms of improving the table setting for people in cities in terms of what they eat. He's talked a lot about how there is such a critical problem within the central city itself, where mm-hmm. people who low income often don't own the homes that they're living in, may not realize that there's even the ability to plant a garden in the backyard. So with that in mind, is the focus right now primarily in that central city area where you have people who don't live within a mile or sometimes more of a grocery store?
You know, we're thinking about the city of Milwaukee, and the city has a lot of vacant plots. The city, the growing power's over there on 55th and Silver Spring. Will has been talking about building a vertical farm. He's going to build a vertical farm, and that's a revolutionary concept right now. The Institute hopes to be part of that farm as we go forward with houses, not houses, but rooms, laboratories, workshop, places for community engagement, but research as well. This has an enormous potential. This is a city kind of issue. It's about urban America, but it's also about America in general. And improving the food conditions for people, whether they're urban or rural, it doesn't matter. Eating better food and ultimately better health outcomes as a result of that is what we're really aiming toward.
Bob Greenstreet, our dean of the School of Architecture, has been on the program. And recently he was telling me that there's a bright, bright future for architects because people are moving back to the city and they need a place to live. And if you take a look at a lot of cities, because of the recession, we are well underbuilt from where we should be. So is the notion that that this Institute for Urban Agriculture and Nutrition could be replicated in other big cities?
Absolutely. I mean, the city of Detroit, two-thirds of the city is vacant. They have enormous – they have other kinds of issues and problems, obviously. But there is enormous opportunity in major cities across this country, across the world, to use the idea of locally grown – better opportunity, knowledge empowerment. That's where social welfare comes in. We're going to empower you to raise your own food. You don't need anybody else. Good food, healthy food that will ultimately lead toward better health outcomes and empower and create jobs in the city. This is all a big part of the plan, absolutely.
So instead of building Fords, building farms in these cities.
Hey, cabbages are great.
Well, and in Milwaukee in particular, we ourselves have land that no longer is used for building things.
And the city is really behind this. They've really given, and they're a partner with us in the development of this. So we're going to go forward, and I think the forward is really exciting. Challenging, but exciting.
What opportunities for the general public to get involved? Are you at the point yet where folks listening to this program can say, that sounds really cool. I'd love to see a more sustainable way of providing food to people who live in the city.
As we finish our structure, we're finishing our organizational structure right now. There will be opportunities for that, and we welcome everyone. We're not trying to be exclusive. We want to be inclusive, but we have to have a structure in place that allows those people to access us and access what's happening here, because you have to get a handle on it. You got to get control. Otherwise, it gets too amorphous, too big, and unmanageable. Got to be able to coordinate it, manage it, and ultimately lead it going down the road. That won't be me. That'll be someone else. My goal here is to help people and work with this committee to move it forward.
Too early to know yet what the first big project of this institute will be?
No, I think we'd be presumptuous right now to put that out, but believe me, we got a number of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and as far as students go, will there be opportunities for people at UWM, Marquette,
absolutely,
the other schools to be involved?
Will has more students, and more of them come from UWM than any other place. But he has students from all over the country who want to come and work on his farm and work with him. And so, and it's not just Will. There are 60 people, members of the Food Council, 60 organizations, agencies. There's Walnut Way. There's the Garden Initiative, Gretchen Mead. There are a bunch of people all over the city who are doing these kinds of things. And so there's opportunity. And the opportunity, economic opportunity, is to, can we have jobs that are sustainable wages where people can be in the urban agriculture industry? That is clearly a major spinoff as we go forward as well. We have a lot of people who are interested in that. And so we're... I said, when I get a structure in place and we're accessible and we know where we are, and we have our board of directors and we have all the people in place, then we're going to do these things.
So we've primed the pump today. We'll have to have you back on to fill in the blanks as the structure.
We'll
comes
give
together.
You updates as we experience them.
Well, Stan, thanks very much. It's been an entertaining half hour, and we wish you the very best on both of the initiatives.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
Stan Stojkovic, the dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, our guest on this edition of UWM Today, talking both about his leadership on a program helping to promote partnerships with FEMA, and of course, as we've been discussing, the Institute for Urban Agriculture and Nutrition. Well, that's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.